For December the 6th, 2013, we talk about the Metal Gear Solid 5 delay, kind of, a bunch of old games, and ask you what your favorite new IP is, and try to determine what that even means. Welcome to the 43rd level, for real this time. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is Stephen Weissman.
My name is Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games, goddammit. as you heard, Dennis is missing. He is currently on another continent, enjoying a nice trip to Peru with his wife, going to ancient cities, I presume, and going into mountains to to live out his Nathan Drake fantasies.
It suddenly all makes sense.
Yeah.
More so than it ever has before. So,
without a doubt.
Without a doubt. So, yeah. First off, I would like to apologize. It's been a couple weeks. Yes, by a strict definition, it has been 2 weeks since we have done a podcast because I lost the last real episode we recorded like a bonehead. So I'm being much more careful now. We're not going to lose this again. So everybody who contributed to that multiplayer that I so boneheadedly lost, we're going to do that again this week. Can't guarantee we're going to cover all of the ground that we covered, but we must soldier on in the face of misplaced keystrokes. What? but yeah, hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. Anybody have any Thanksgiving stories?
David? What did you do?
I did the general meal with family and then a good deal of Black Friday shopping.
Holy shit. Really? You went out?
Yeah. I picked up a suit.
Okay.
Oh.
And some
You think you're better than me?
I think I am better dressed.
Okay.
Ooh.
Damn.
It's going down on the podcast tonight.
The gauntlet done been thrown, man. Gauntlet done been thrown. Shit.
No, it's funny. Like, buying, you know, this one piece of clothing probably costs, except for maybe, like, one of my other jackets, you know, as much as the rest of my wardrobe, and I'll wear it, like, 5 times a year.
Look at me. My name's David. My wardrobe can't be subscribed to on Amazon.
What? No.
That's cool.
I know. It seems I feel somewhat wasteful. I feel guilty.
You ought to have a suit.
Still though, you know?
Yeah, every suit has to come with 2 receipts. One from when you bought it, one from the tailor, you know? that's what I hear anyway. I only went to one store on Black Friday. That was a comic store. I haven't been to one in several years. It wasn't as BO-y as I have become accustomed to from that kind of establishment. I bought a bunch of Walking Dead. So
nice.
Yeah.
Which one did you go to?
It was up in Mansfield. It's called The Realm.
That's still around?
Yeah, I know. I was super surprised. So my stepdad, who his midlife crisis is, it revolves entirely around Superman. My stepdad was like, hey, do you want to go to this store? Because I need to go get some Smallville comics. And I was like, oh, you know, whatever. I just finished reading the most recent trade paperback of Walking Dead. I was like, you know, if you're driving, cool, because I don't want to drive in Black Friday traffic, because fuck that. I went there and I got some single issues of Walking Dead and Astonishing X-Men trade paperback. Yeah. But yeah, The Realm. So for context, and as to why David is astonished that it still exists, that was like a pen and paper role playing game place slash comic shop, like back when we were in high school. And from my estimation, it was staffed entirely by the owner's friends and like the various burnouts that inhabited the greater Mansfield slash Ontario area. But yeah, it's not in the same place. It's where Comic Adventures used to be.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So it's not in the Cervix Center anymore.
That was such a bad name.
Yeah, I know, right? High five, Mansfield, bro. But yeah. Do we want to talk about video games, though?
I guess.
Okay, whatever. Now it is time for the brief, where I almost say the name of the wrong segment. No, so this is where we talk about things that are happening in this world around us. News section is what other podcasts call them, but we're just a little bit different, right? So looking at this here, do you guys mind if I start?
Go for it.
Sure.
Yeah, so we were talking about Black Friday. I was rejoicing because this is the second year in a row that I haven't had to work Black Friday at a video game establishment. And nice. the news very much double underlined my joy at not having to do that, specifically because can I roll this out? Can I call this a portrait of shame?
Dude, sure. Yeah, let's bring it back.
Yeah, let's do this. Drop the horns, man. Yeah. Yeah, no, back on the old show, it was the portrait of shame where people disappoint humanity. So like Black Friday, you know, the first Black Friday after a console launch, you expect stuff to get hairy. You know, not like, you know, straight up shooting and killing a fucker hairy, but, you know, these things tend to happen. But yeah, there's a 21-year-old guy in San Francisco who just committed attempted robbery and successful murder. Of a 21-year-old dude shot a 22-year-old dude in order to get a PlayStation 4 and then fleeing the scene, which is good. Yep. Yeah, no, it sucks. No, it sucks that this person died. The police did catch him. His last name is Uwaka. There we go. You know, he arrived in a meeting place with his girlfriend, was shot multiple times. It's just a real bad scene. So don't shoot people for new consoles. I think we've established on this show, that there's no real reason to be excited over them, like let alone being upset that, somebody was trying to stiff you. Just real bad. Don't shoot somebody for a PS4. But he's arrested. He's off the streets. It really sucks that a person is dead because of this stupid fucking reason.
Yeah, that's
yeah. Blah.
This is just going to be a bunch of downer news stories.
Is it? Is yours a downer?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'd like to move off of this one as quickly as possible because I really don't want it to sound like I'm making light of a person's death. Just don't shoot people. For fuck's sake, don't do that.
Yeah.
Hit me, Ben.
All right. My downer story is involving Metal Gear Solid 5.
Okay.
Apparently, Kojima had an interview recently where he said that the game will be very large, I guess, in size and scope, and so that it will be further delayed into the or I guess not delayed, they didn't use that word, but they said it will come out later when the PS4 is more established, I guess.
Huh.
So the prologue, which we've mentioned before, the Phantom Pain, is kind of like a something to tide people over, but
Ground Zeroes?
Yeah, excuse me, sorry. Phantom Pain's the full-size game.
Mm-hmm.
So Ground Zeroes is supposed to tide people over. It'll be coming out spring 2014, but they haven't made a release date of the 5.
Yeah.
The Phantom Pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been thinking about that more recently, just as I've been playing Snatcher for Watch Out for Fireballs, getting kind of excited over it. It's kind of like, they're doing some interesting stuff with it. And I'm very sad to hear that they're pushing it back. However, I'd rather they do that than give it short shrift, right?
Yes, but so. That's true.
Yeah. What? So Metal Gear Solid 4 came out a year into the PlayStation 3's life cycle? Something like that?
Yeah, thereabouts.
2007, like summer 2007?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really love his description of what the game's going to be like. At first, something will happen. Then the title will appear like, bam. And then 9 years later, a big event will be the start of Metal Gear Solid 5.
Jeez.
Hopefully, he's not talking about Earth time on that one.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm assuming he's meaning that Ground Zeroes takes place 9 years before, like, Metal Gear Solid 5, but it does sound like he's giving himself a very large release window.
you know, under promise, over deliver, right?
Right.
You know, that's kind of what they did with Metal Gear Solid 2, right? They had the prologue, or the first chapter, which was, you know, Snake on the tanker, and then they did Raiden on the rig, right? So
wasn't that more of a bait and switch?
Not really, no. I mean, so that was a weird situation because they advertised Raiden more in Japan. Like, really, you know, Raiden was more front and center in them, so, like, that was built into their expectations, whereas every time they showed it over in America, they kept Snake front and center. So even boss fights that Raiden was the primary participant in, they showed that, you know, they showed Snake in that, which doesn't make it sound any less like a bait and switch. So I'm gonna back out of that as quickly as possible.
Sorry, it's probably because motorboat sound.
Like a jet ski or a motorcycle, sound, yeah. Like some kind of scooter.
I was thinking of a moped. Yeah,
or, yeah, like a scooter. It can be any like 2-stroke engine, I think.
I was thinking more like the like Grand Theft Auto, you know, drug runner speedboat.
Oh, like a cigarette boat.
Yeah.
I was thinking not even your moped, but somebody else's moped, and you just hop on the back.
Oh, yeah.
Just punch a hipster, take the moped.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is funny. Yeah. I mean, I really, really like Metal Gear Solid 2, though. Every time I've gone back to it, it's been delightful.
Do you like it more than the third one?
No.
Snake Eater. All right.
I like the series a lot. Just the more that I think about it in general, like it's probably one of my favorite, you know, like per game, the amount of enjoyment, like each one of them does something awesome. Have you played 2, Ben? I know that 3 is your
jam, played
but
part of 2.
Okay.
I didn't play to the end. I know it's supposed to get weird. I haven't seen the weirdness.
Yeah.
Wait, isn't that basically what Metal Gear Solid does?
Get weird?
Yeah, it gets straight up weird usually in the third act, but let me think here. So like 2 is good if you played 1, like you know, like because 2 is a real companion piece to that. Kind of like Silent Hill 3 is really good if you played Silent Hill 1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, there's another Konami thing, right? But yeah.
Do you want to know when the Metal Gear Solid franchise won me over?
Tell me.
When you climb the ladder in the third game.
Honestly, that is still one of my favorite like gaming like reference points.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this with the Snake Eater theme song. What's your experience with the Metal Gear games, David?
I've actually never played any of them. It's funny. These probably the games that have been the longest on my like games I really want to play, but I've just never gone around to them.
Oh, there's never been a better time to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. Yeah. My main exposure to them, and this is going to sound weird, but all of the martial arts in the games actually works.
Okay.
And so, like, most of my actual exposure to it has been through, you know, I'm in martial arts, and so, like, people, you know, discussing the various, you know, some of the techniques and you know, the fact that, you know, all of them actually do work.
Yeah, like the CQC kind of things, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's actually, ironically enough, most of my experience with it. But, no, I mean, I like that kind of, you know, slow-paced kind of, you know, stealthy tactical gameplay. And yeah. I've always heard very, you know, positive things about the series just kind of, I guess from a storytelling slash, you know, kind of detail standpoint.
Yeah. I would call them a pretty big part of being like literate about games, which isn't to like be like, wow, oh, you're illiterate. Like, no, that just, but just like you would benefit from them as somebody who knows about games. Like they're
right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Especially too. Yeah, pick up the HD collection. It's it is real solid.
Yeah,
Where do you think is the best place to start?
I would say one, like just because it does really hold up. Best. Like if you know, I don't imagine, David, that you're real put off by old graphics. So I don't have an awful reservations about saying that. You know, like one is the easiest to get a hold of. If you're looking for one that's like a real self-contained kind of package that holds up, three is unassailable, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. Which, but I mean, if you pick up the HD collection, you've got two and three, and then you already have a PlayStation 3. So the first one is available on PSN for like $6.
Okay, yeah, because that's what I was going to say is I think they're all. Isn't the HD collection available on PSN too?
Maybe I think you can pick them up a la carte that way. I still need to play Peace Walker. That was like one of those ones that because it was PSP exclusive for so long, I never played it. And that is a huge blind spot for me. And that has a lot to do with the Metal Gear Solid 5 because it's, you know, it's the big boss saga.
Right. The other thing I'm interested in seeing is I played the Solar Boys Adventure in Vampire Land, or whatever we called it.
Oh man, that is a deep cut to a thing that doesn't really matter. But yeah, that is what we called it. I think you were referring to Boktai.
Which is, I guess, like the same development team or something like that.
Yeah, that was Kojima's like his portable side project.
Yeah, and that as a side note, that is one of those games I'm really kind of I feel bad that it didn't really go anywhere.
There were two of them.
There were two of them, but they never. They still like.
Yeah, it didn't become a franchise like Metal Gear Solid did.
Right, exactly. But no, I'm interested to see from that kind of what ends up being the common DNA, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, but Boktai is a little stealthy.
It's straight up a stealth game.
Yeah, like, and it's top down, just like the first two Metal Gear Solids were.
Up like press up against walls and like knock on them to attract enemies and stuff like that.
Oh man, like now you just make me want to play the Metal Gear Solid Game Boy Color game. Ghost Babel, so fucking good.
Acid? Was that any?
Yeah, so like that is one that I remember just reading a bunch about and being really excited because it's a tactical card game. Kind of set in that realm, in that universe. Yeah, but I never got a chance to play that or its sequel. Neither of those are like available now because like fuck if any place ever sells physical PSP games and it's not available on the PSN.
Yeah, see, I always remembered it being like, hey, if you want to play a really, really great PSP game, this is the only one.
Those first couple of years, yeah.
Hey, just one sec. I need to stop the dryer from attacking my house.
I need to pop and lock. Pop and Locktoberfest.
what were some of the other names? I only remember the Heather Pop and Locklears.
Yeah.
Are we still talking about Pop and Lock?
A little bit, yeah.
Are you asking that as if it's a bad thing?
Yeah.
Oh, it's good dance style.
Are we still talking about Pop and Lock? Yeah.
There you go.
That's the enthusiasm that I expect. Oh, man. I forget what the other ones were, but yeah, I'm watching Twin Peaks again now. All right.
Does Twin Peaks at some point become not the horrible thing that is at least an hour into the pilot?
Oh, the pilot's so fucking good.
Oh, it's the most boring thing I've ever seen.
Oh, God, it's establishing all of the possible suspects, David.
I don't care. Why should I even care about this chick that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a small town. It's not something that happens all the time. You know, this poor woman. So, yeah, no, like once Kyle MacLachlan shows up, it gets really good.
Okay.
When the actual investigation starts.
Okay, because like that is a show that's apparently amazing. That, yeah, at least in my opinion, makes a very poor argument for itself in the first, say, hour.
Yeah, like Kyle MacLachlan is definitely the center and the heart. Oh God, Audrey Horne, fuck yeah, no, she does it for me. But no, like once the actual investigation starts and the supernatural stuff comes in. But you know, like you grow to love the quirky townspeople, you know. Sorry, closing that window that shows Audrey Horne, and we're good. All right, so, David, how about you? How about a news story to get me away from that?
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a off the wall one, and it will eventually be related to video games. Scientists at Emory University in Atlanta did an experiment with rats where they exposed them to the scent of cherries and then shocked them repeatedly until they were, you know, afraid of the scent of cherries. And then artificially inseminated them and, you know, ended up with baby rats. And exposed them to the scent of cherries and also found that they were afraid of cherries.
Mm-hmm.
And this had proved two things. One, for all of the people who, you know, end up with a philosophy degree and then can't have a, you know, then end up working at McDonald's, at least they didn't get a PhD and end up artificially inseminating rats.
Okay.
But more on topic, this actually, they've proven that apparently it is possible for a person's ancestors' experiences to be encoded in their DNA.
Yeah, this is this is
that Assassin's Creed is science.
No, this is epigenetics, right?
I'm not sure of the term. Is that what the correct term?
Yeah. So the idea is that you know, we all have kind of this hard coded DNA that is that is permanently a part of our makeup and right. is, you know, that can't really be changed. However, there are certain things about the way that our ancestors, even as recent as our grandparents and our parents, that kind of put flags over top of. Activate or suppress different parts. So like right. if your grandparents grew up in the Depression and they didn't have a lot to eat, they had these epigenetic markers that were active for the rest of their lives and that were passed down to your parents and to you, which means that your body will more effectively, use nutrients, right?
Which unfortunately means you end up gaining weight.
Does it? I thought that it meant that you ended up not gaining weight as easily.
No, it's the other way around. Your body tends to, for example, one of the reasons that many African-American people struggle with weight is it's believed is because traditionally, you know, Africa, you know, hasn't had as much access to food, so mm-hmm. their bodies store it incredibly efficiently.
Yeah.
Which then when you do have access to a reasonable amount of food basically means your body goes overboard.
Okay. Yeah, but just the idea that you know, it doesn't, you know, it's kind of like Lamarck was right a little bit.
Right, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't make your neck longer, but it makes you more likely to go after certain kinds of fruit. Right.
Right. Or hopefully, you know, teaches you to, you know, stab Templar.
So is that really the only video game connection to that?
That is the only video game connection to that.
Attaboy.
Perhaps foreshadowing into what he's been playing.
Actually, ironically not, but
The grind.
So since we had that nice segue in front of us, why don't we jump right into the grind? And I'm gonna put you on the spot, David.
Sure. I've mainly been continuing to play Batman Arkham Asylum.
Okay.
I'm to basically I'm to the point where I just found out from is it Cash, where Killer Croc's lair is. So I'm about to go after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I don't know. According to the completion percent that's about halfway through the game, I don't know if that's actually an accurate depiction.
Ben would be more able to say that.
Well, what you just said happens, I think, a couple times, so I'm not exactly sure where you are in the game.
It's right after the and maybe this happened several times, right after the botanical gardens.
Hmm. Yeah, you go back there a couple times from what I remember. Right?
there's a lot of backtracking in this game.
Yeah.
Sure. Let me think here. I just got the line launcher.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to ask is what's the latest gadget you've gotten? Okay, yeah, I mean, I'd say you're about halfway through, maybe.
Okay. I think one of my favorite things is now that you've got the line launcher, they've repeatedly do the thing where, enemies will be on the other side of, a ravine, taunting you, oh, you can't get us.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to, line launcher over and, maybe kick a couple and, mm-hmm. Fight them. But mm-hmm. I found what I like doing is just using the grappling hook to just pull them all into, one by one, into the bottomless pit.
You're cold, David. You're a cold knight.
A cold knight.
I know it's we lost this in when the previous episode got lost, but it really annoys me that Batman doesn't kill people simply because apparently in Gotham locking someone up is completely irrelevant because they can escape wherever they want to.
Right.
I mean, freaking Zass has already escaped, I think, twice just in this one night.
Wait till you play Arkham City.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I'm kind of taking matters into my own hands, and my version of Batman is finding ways to even the score.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think as we mentioned in previous episodes, when he hangs people upside down. And then you knock those ropes and they fall on their dome. That's probably killing them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many things in there that's that straight up would kill someone.
I mean, with medical science, as long as they can suck and blow, they're able to manipulate their wheelchairs, right? it's a kind of life.
Batman just turns everyone into vegetables.
When you knock someone out, if you check them, their heart rate is 32 beats per minute.
Yeah, which means you're gonna go brain dead.
Yeah, it's I'm not sure, but I don't think that works.
Yeah.
But the game. I mean, I feel like I'm obviously preaching to the choir, but the game is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That combat, man. That combat.
The combat's really good. I feel like it's kind of ironic. I feel like this is a game that would work a lot better with a controller just because the combat is very busy.
No argument here?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
At least it's a two-button combat system, though, right?
Well, the problem is all the extra things. So you can also do throw... takedown, ground takedown, and
I see. Yeah.
And it's kind of ironic because I feel like usually keyboard's better for things where you have to do a lot of thing, different tasks. Like for example, an MMO. But I feel like the difference is in this: you need immediate access to all those things.
Yeah.
And it's just not quite intuitive enough. I mean, it still works very, very well.
It's almost like a mode switch in Arkham City more than an MMO where it's just firing stuff off and waiting for cooldowns.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, it still works. I still can't figure out how the critical hit system works. I will say that. But, and I also feel like the writing and the voice acting, I think, pretty well done, really.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin Conroy, and that's his name, right, Ben?
Yeah.
Like
for Batman.
Batman. Yeah. Like that is Batman. Like that. Like that's what sounds like to me in my head. And you've got
especially since he did the animated series that we grew up with.
Exactly. Right.
Did he do the original animated series?
The one in the 90s. Yeah. In the early 90s. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've got it's pretty much the entire cast of the animated series. Like Harley, the voice actress for Harley Quinn is the same one as the animated series.
Okay.
She hadn't left until, she left for Arkham City, but she was the same in this one.
Okay.
Know?
Yeah. The one Mark that Hamill. I do have to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean.
Amazing.
Yeah. The one thing I have to say, though, I'm assuming at some point, I'm going to have to fight Poison Ivy. But yeah. Batman does kind of just arbitrarily antagonize and provoke her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of like there's really no reason for all that to happen.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Like, yeah, it's, I don't know, that just struck me as one thing where it's like, okay.
Yeah. She's not the main antagonist of the game, but she definitely does the most damage throughout it.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She is shockingly powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really good. The one that I feel like, though, and we've been talking about, you know, kind of it's, there's not... We can't quite figure out the reason to be excited about the new console generation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for the previous console generation, you know, the PlayStation 3, stuff like that, I feel like this is very much a game that would not have been possible before that is, if that makes sense.
Why do you say that?
Just in terms of like... A superhero game that's actually about being a superhero as opposed to just being a game where you can do some superhero things, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, like, it's not just, you know, like, you know, there's been Batman games and Superman games and stuff like that, but they've mostly just been kind of brawlers. Whereas this one's much more, you know, the open world and the, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. I would say that's much more true of Arkham City than this one, just because of how contained this is. Like, I'm just trying to think of, you know, everything that is being kept track of. And that's the biggest, that's the biggest differentiator between, you know, PS2 and PS3 or, you know, that generation and this most recent one, which is how many things are being kept track of. Not so much what they can show on the screen, which obviously is better. That's the expectation.
Right.
And there's just so much more being kept track of in Arkham City, you know, which isn't to say that there isn't a lot being kept track of in Arkham Asylum, but yeah.
And I guess for me, I will say, because of kind of how I've played them, they kind of run together. I kind of think of them as being one game.
You've played City, right? Some of it?
I played a little bit of Arkham Asylum, like, a long time ago, and then I've played a very little, you know, maybe like a half hour, an hour into City.
Okay.
And, I'm interested to see. I feel like City, like you said, is much more open world. I feel like, the big thing I've noticed is the detective vision works much better, by which I mean you don't have to use it all the time.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, yeah. I've heard the opposite complaint of, you know, against this, which is Arkham City, they deliberately designed it so that you didn't have to keep your, you know, detective vision on, whereas Arkham Asylum, there was no reason to turn it off.
Right. I would say in Arkham Asylum, if you don't have detective vision on, you're playing suboptimally.
In Arkham Asylum?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem being, from what I've seen, is I can't tell if it's just they've extended its range or what, but you can't just turn detective vision on, see where you have to watch out for ambushes, and then go through the level in Arkham Asylum, whereas you can do that in Arkham City.
Right.
So I found that, anytime I'm in like Predator mode, I've found I pretty much have to have it on all the time to like keep track of where people are, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been way too long, and I played them really far apart, actually. So
sure.
I couldn't make a direct comparison.
Yeah, but yeah.
I think in City it was a response to people complaining about Asylum, because the common complaint with Asylum is that you were fighting skeletons the entire time.
Yeah.
Which, as
why would you complain?
Side note, I was really, really disappointed you couldn't turn on detective mode during the Scarecrow scenes, because I was hoping the skeletons would appear as people. Well, those scenes, by the way, are really, really well done.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely the highlight. And I was really disappointed that nothing similar to that showed up in Arkham City.
Yeah, that's...
was something.
There's...
Don't.
Sorry. Okay. All right. So I'll put a marker there. I know you're sensitive.
Yeah, I'm... the one thing I will say, though, the one downside to that scene, it's just kind of funny, is they fix your perspective, and the combat system doesn't work with a fixed perspective.
Right.
But no, those scenes are so, so good. And I really like visually and like character-wise their take on Scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
With the weird like Freddy Krueger gloves.
Yeah. I was watching Batman Begins over break. It was on television. That's such a good movie. Like, I fucking love Scarecrow.
Yeah, I actually was really disappointed that he wasn't made more explicitly like a main villain. You know what I mean? That didn't focus on more, just because
The Batman Begins wasn't all about Scarecrow.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of like pacing, or as a series, I feel like having the first movie, there not being exactly any supervillains, and then Dark Knight being like OMFG, supervillains are a thing, like Chaos. I feel like that was better.
Joker, I mean, it's not like Joker had any powers or anything. Nothing was supernatural about it,
Oh, yeah, but I mean, still was, like...
He had a costume.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's still, like, a major theme of it was kind of...
Escalation. I mean, they talked about it at the end of Batman Begins, right? Which is, just kind of like, okay, what are we going to do to top each other? And Joker's thing was, let's just have this reckless disregard, right?
Right, exactly. So, I understand that, and I think that's the right decision to make. However, I feel like the Scarecrow's a very interesting character.
Yeah.
So I kind of think it was too bad they didn't, find some way to, spend more time with that.
I think that they did him justice. I mean, Cillian Murphy was, just having him be, the psychologist throughout the entire thing, and, making him the puppet for race was good, But
right.
Batman chat. Bat chat.
A podcast about bats. And Batman.
You played anything else, David?
I picked up on Steam sale The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing.
Huh.
It's an action RPG, Diablo style. I don't know. It's interesting. Like, it seems pretty well put together, pretty well voice acted. It's kind of set, has this kind of sort of steampunky Pulp Fiction type of setting.
Okay. Would you call it Grindhouse?
What?
Would you call it Grindhouse?
Maybe. Why?
I'm just curious. because you
I'll
threw
call
out, like,
it anything you want.
You threw out like 17 cliches in a row there, and I wanted to make sure there weren't any that like were just clinging to the side and needed to be shake loose.
Wait. I mean Pulp Fiction, the genre, not the movie.
I know.
Okay. Yeah. I would say. Did you see the Van Helsing movie that is made a?
Yeah, like 2005. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, as far as I can tell, no actual connection to that, but yeah. It's very much the same take on the character.
Right. So he's not an old man. He's Wolverine, who is also a werewolf. He's a
werewolf.
Right. Well,
not werewolf so much in this one, but yeah. I mean, in this one, technically, you're the original Van Helsing's son.
Okay.
So they at least kind of, but it's sort of the, like, the opening monologue is you train, is him relating his adventures as he traveled from London to Romania or wherever where this takes place.
Okay.
And, you know, over the course of that, he just casually fights, like, werewolves and the Kraken and deep ones. It's very much this kind of let's throw every mythological creature into this world type of thing.
Right, like fables or, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very quirky, but it just seems very likable. It's kind of my read on the game so far.
Hmm. Yeah. When did this game come out?
I think either earlier this year or last year.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw it on the Steam sale, and I paid no mind to it. You know, just it didn't appear to be anything to me. But you're saying it's good?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten real far into it, like I said, but you know, definitely the gameplay. You know, it's a good action game. You know, they, you know, its big conceit is you can switch between ranged and melee
right.
on the fly.
From,
and
your, from
so,
your crossbow to your cross sword.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, you can, you know, get some, I think, some steampunky gadgets or something. So the gameplay, the only main thing is kind of your sidekick is a ghost.
Okay.
And a lot of the dialogue is kind of very kind of reminiscent of the most recent Prince of Persia in a way, in terms of like a lot of the characterization is playing on Van Helsing and his ghost sidekick's interactions.
Okay. Yeah, so you're talking about like the 2008 Prince of Persia with him and Elka, or
yes.
Okay.
So, it's you know, it's one of those things where it's so much like gothic romanticism, romantic horror, is something I really like, and like the steampunk, that stuff's something I really like. Mm-hmm. So I like it. I don't know if someone who wasn't so blatantly in its target market would like it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
They put it up on a Steam sale, so a bunch of people probably bought it.
Yeah. So.
Neat. Anything else?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Cool. So Ben, in the pre-roll, you talked about having a little bit of a surprise for us. Can you elucidate that for me?
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot of stuff over the last 2 to 3 weeks, but I'll go chronologically. I'll have to try and remember. I guess we probably won't cover what we did 2 weeks ago.
No.
I forget because I – well, okay, yeah, all right, whatever. Because I'm trying to mention – did I mention that I had beat Arkham Origins?
Yes, you did.
Okay, and I think that was 2 weeks ago, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in the last episode.
There's some spooky skeletons in that episode
as
well.
Yes, there were.
There's always spooky skeletons.
All these moments will be lost in time, like tears and rain.
Did we reference that 2 weeks ago too?
No, I reference it most weeks. So
okay, all right, yeah. So it's just kind of a wash.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So
at the best, it's just kind of a wash.
So I beat that game. So it was kind of disappointing. I guess this is a nice segue from David's as well. So David, just stop at Arkham City. You don't need to go on and play Origins. It's not worth it.
Are we talking like Prince of now again Sands of Time, Prince of Persia, like that level of stop?
It doesn't go downhill. It just stays lateral at best.
Mm.
So, but it's imitation. I don't know.
Batme.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. That doesn't sound appetizing.
No.
But anyway, yeah. So like the creativity you see in like Arkham Asylum, and then you will see in Arkham City if you continue to play it, is just not really present here. It's more of a rehash. So that was upsetting. Whatever. Be done with that. But after the Lost episode, I picked up the Humble Bundle, which was 2 weeks ago. They had one for
the Android bundle.
Yeah, for Android games. And as to give you a hint of what I've been playing, fuck Infinity Jellyfish. Oh, yeah. So one of the games on it was Ridiculous Fishing, which I think I beat last night. There was a cutscene. It seemed like it was closure. So yeah.
I ran far away.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's entertaining. It's nice. It was enjoyable. It's very, it's a bite-sized game though, right? You know, it's like a good mobile game to play in your spare time.
How do you beat fishing though? Is it like you have caught all the fish in the ocean?
Well, you kind of have a Pokédex. Like when you say fuck Infinity Jellyfish, that's one of the like boss fish that you have to do like puzzles to get, right?
I don't know if I had to do any puzzles to get them, but they're just there in the water. And so I know, Cole, you've described what this game was, but in case we don't have any longtime listeners, the premise of the game is you play an old man on a boat and you do ridiculous fishing. So you tap it, your line starts going down, and you try and dodge fish for as long as possible as your line goes further, deeper and deeper in the water. As soon as you hit a fish, it goes on to your lure, and then you try – your lure goes back up to the boat, and then you try and catch as many fish as you can. So you're doing the complete opposite strategy as you did before on the way up. And then as soon as it reaches your boat, you yank them out of the water, and then you tap furiously on your phone to shoot them all out of the air. That's ridiculous fishing. And so pretty much – every element of it can be upgraded, so you can upgrade your gun so that you can shoot fish more efficiently. You can upgrade your lure so that it either you can add like a chainsaw to it to go through fish so that you don't catch them earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. So everything's upgradable, and it's pretty. You know, it's very much over the top, so it's cute. I don't know what I was building towards with this. But one of the fish is this thing called the Infinity Jellyfish, where if you shoot it or kill it, it spawns two new ones in its place, one to the right and one to its left. And if you shoot or kill either of those two, it spawns two more of those. So you can get a lot of Infinity Jellyfish if you're not careful about what you're tapping on, especially if you have like an upgraded weapon that kills everything. So I did that for.
Would you say you can get infinity jellyfish?
Yeah, well, it's like a fractal.
Yeah, so I tried that, and just for funsies, you can't get infinite. It's just the mathematician in me is saying you can't get infinite. You can get a lot. They grow quite quickly.
Yeah,
but anyway,
but just up to that point, you've been trained to shoot everything out of the air. And if you're not being real discerning about what you're going after, you can get yourself in a real mess of trouble. And by real mess of trouble, I just mean you're not getting as much money as you possibly could otherwise.
Yeah, so it has a couple of different mechanics, similar to like how Resident Evil 4, the things that pop out of people's heads, mm-hmm. was a great like curveball to make you rethink your strategy up until that point. They do a couple things like that in this one, where first you're just catching fish the entire time, but soon they have jellyfish, mm-hmm. which take away money instead of give you money if you kill them. I don't know why. I guess jellyfish are not valuable. Yeah. But, yeah, so then you have to dodge certain fish as you're going back up. You don't want to take certain ones. So I don't know. It's pretty interesting. There's also later on they have like hard-headed fish that you can't drill through with a chainsaw. Mm-hmm. And so your normal strategy of just like running, plowing through a school of fish and killing them all doesn't work anymore if you go deep enough. So they do a great job of introducing fish that make you mix up the strategies that you're using. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean that's a cute little bite-sized game. It's worth it, I guess. Yeah, check it out. Yeah. You know. Also in the bundle was a game which I don't know how to pronounce.
Rimmed Castle.
Yeah, that's the one. You know how to pronounce it. Yeah, it's just a short strategy game. There's just one level that you can play for as long as you can survive. I have not found, I don't think it has another level outside of that. But it's like a kind of like a worker placement sort of game. You have these little white poles or like white rectangles that are your minions. Mm-hmm. And you basically assign them to different positions. Or different jobs to be doing, and you can have them build different stations and then operate those stations to get more resources to build out your base. And eventually, one of the mechanics is you need to build defensive rooms because you get attacked every so often, every minute, every 30 seconds or so. It gets shorter and shorter as you go on. It's a fun concept for a game. Unfortunately, they only have the one level, and you just play until ruined. So you just play until you can't defend anymore and you die. And so I was kind of disappointed by that setup of it. I thought it could have been perhaps better executed if they had more levels to it, or they had more evolution to the gameplay of it. Yeah. But I don't know. You know, whatever.
It's a neat little resource management strategy game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's part of the bundle, so it's a pretty good deal. But
yeah.
But yeah, those were the two main ones that I played as far as those games go. Then came Thanksgiving and Black Friday, and I jumped back on the console bandwagon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I actually went out for Black Friday, which I typically never do. Thankfully, it wasn't really that busy. I was able to navigate. I did not get in any fights, and it was very, you know, it was nothing bad happened while I was out. But I picked up two games. One of them was Beyond, I don't know what the tagline for it.
Beyond
the
Ellen Two Souls. Page.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, so I picked that
he said
up.
With contempt.
Yeah,
I really hope the sequel is Beyond Three Souls.
Yeah.
It's about polygamous.
That should be the sub headline.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I have not played that yet, however.
Okay.
Because I got another game, which was the curveball game. I got Dragon Age 2 because it was super cheap and it was made by the same people who made Knights of the Republic, I believe. It's made by BioWare.
Yeah, it's made by BioWare.
Did the Coder team go on to do Mass Effect, or did they go on to do this?
I
don't know.
I don't know that I'm able to answer that question.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think that like Dragon Age 2, like that team was an extension of Dragon Age, like the first one. I think they went right to that, and they had more to do with Baldur's Gate than they did with any of the Coder games.
Okay. Yeah, well, in any case, I got it hoping that it would be like Knights of the Old Republic, and it kind of is. Mm-hmm. So I've been happy with it so far. So I've sunk a decent amount of time into it over the holiday weekend.
Yeah.
But Yeah, and so far it's not bad. I would not say that it is yet as good or better than Knights of the Republic, but yeah, that's kind of a hard measuring stick that I don't think a lot of games would live up to.
Right.
But it is very similar as far as gameplay goes, where you basically go to a city. The city has its political problems. You kind of talk to people on all sides of the issue, and then the issue kind of starts to come to a head, and you kind of play a deciding character in it. And so that's kind of the setup for every planet you go to in the Knights of the Old Republic game. And so this is kind of the same sort of in the same sort of vein. Mm-hmm. So
right, what once went wrong and hope that the next jump to hyperspace is the jump home.
It's like Quantum Leap.
So it's
like that, and it has a decently interesting upgrade system so far.
So
I'm playing through that. As soon as I'm done with that, I'll probably start on Beyond. Then on top of that, Cyber Monday sales, I picked up XCOM Enemy Within, the expansion to Enemy Unknown, just because I realized that it was made by the same people who made Civilization. And
Firaxis.
I will jump on that bandwagon soon enough. I'm basically like Dennis plus 2 months. You're behind 2 months.
It's funny because like we basically play games in the round. Like I play Beyond 2 months ago, and then everybody starts picking it up. You know, y'all haters be copping my style. You know,
that's what I do. I be copping cheap prices on games. That's what I'm copping.
That's perfectly reasonable. I'm going to be excited to hear what you think about Dragon Age. I mean, I think that taking on its own merits, especially if you have no expectations or diminished expectations, there's a lot to like about it. However, there is also a lot that you can just be kind of real, just nonplussed or underwhelmed by. And so, like, I just want to see when and if it wears its welcome out.
We'll see. Did you play both Dragon Age 1 and 2?
Yeah.
Why is there so much ill will towards the second one?
So much ill will?
Yeah, it just seems like whenever I hear about Dragon Age 2, it's not to this degree, but it almost sounds like, you know, Sands of Time versus Warrior Within.
Yeah, that's the fourth reference you've made to that. Do you have something you want to say?
It just seems very relevant to this this particular episode. I don't know why.
Yeah. So all the Sands Within. I'll do the short version of it. So there's a certain amount of like glorious PC Master Race happening. In that Dragon Age 1 very much followed, you know, in the Baldur's Gate kind of footsteps. It had more of a tactical, slow kind of feel. It wasn't very much voice acted. It very much felt like, hey, this is more of what we want, and more of what we want is Dragon Age. Dragon Age 2, more of what we want is Baldur's Gate. Dragon Age 2, people were railing against it because they very much took it in the Mass Effect 2 direction, specifically with the dialogue and specifically with some of the quest structure, which I wasn't entirely displeased by. You know, I like that approach to dialogue and that approach to the way that a game is structured. So that's fine.
You can romance anyone in this game.
Oh yeah, you can sex anything up. exactly. So
that's one of the bullet points on the back of the game.
So with that in mind, I think that the better / more cogent point that doesn't fall into glorious PC Master Race is that it just really is rushed. In that they reuse a lot of locales, a lot of enemies, and that for as fun and fast paced as the combat ends up being, it's just incredibly repetitive. Not just on like a press A to win kind of scale, but like I've been in this area 7 times before. Good.
That's one thing I thought about that I guess I didn't mention is one thing that I think really hinders it is the maps are not connected together as much as they should be, and so you do not have like a linear feel for the map. You just have it as it's a set of separated maps that you kind of jump between, and I think that really works to its detriment, because it, like with Knights of the Old Republic, you know the entire map, even though it's a bunch of different areas. You kind of see it as one thing, and you say, okay, I know, you know, on this corner I did this mission, it was awesome, you know, over here I did this, you know, but you don't have that same sort of connectivity with this one, and that, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that was system requirements that...
No.
Because that seems like a very weird way to do that.
I just think it was kind of poor game design, perhaps. Okay.
But by all accounts, the development was incredibly rushed. Like, they released it a lot sooner than anybody expected them to. Okay. Especially with, you know, in relation to how long it took them to make Dragon Age 1. Yeah, just like the entire effect is that it feels real plug-and-play, mix-and-match. That, and it's hilarious that even though the game takes place over the course of a decade, nobody ages or even changes clothes. And really all that changes from chapter to chapter is that it's a different time of day in Kirkwall.
Yeah.
So
you do get casual attire after 10 years for your house.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that the repetition and then just not taking advantage of that scope that they put over it. Like in Assassin's Creed 2, like it takes place over the course of, I think, 40 years of Ezio's life, and it shows. Like they really leverage that. Whereas right, here, yeah, they do not. And since both those games kind of came out at roughly the same time or very close to each other, like I feel like at least in my mind, it was, you know, like it was real fresh, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Man, oh man. But yeah, I'm just gonna be curious. Like, what NPCs have you got in your crew?
So yeah, like I have a party of, I don't know, however many, like 6 or 7 people. The people that I roll with are the dude with the white marks on him.
Yeah, yeah, Fenris.
And yeah, that's the one. And the dwarf with the crossbow.
Yeah, it's a V name guy.
Yeah. Varric, maybe.
Yeah, Varric. Yeah, Varric. The narrator.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And a mage, the dude mage.
Right, right.
With blonde hair, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, Anders.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, Anders. Which means others, which is kind of nice for his character.
Yeah.
But, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I like the class system and how the... you can kind of use the characters to battle. I think that's slightly better than Knights of the Old Republic, because the using both mages and crossbow people, that you can have like a lot of nice compliments with what you're planning on doing. So
yeah, there are definite niches that you can have people fill.
Yeah, so basically I have my mage brittle everybody, and then I have my warrior dude use his anti-brittle attack and destroy everyone. So
Do they use the horrible fantasy game voice acting?
The voice acting's not bad, but it's not fantastic. It's just kind of in the middle. I don't know.
Not the like everyone has a Shakespearean accent thing.
Right.
Has the British accent for sure.
Yeah, there's like a slight British affect, but it's not so much Renfair as like maybe what you would see in, you know, something that wasn't obnoxiously
Fable.
British. Yeah, it's not Fable. Like, yeah, you know, just kind of like they're making a nod to the setting, but it isn't, you know, it isn't bad, you know, bad Renfair kind of stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Fable was actually like a British development team or something like that.
It was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Meant that everything was like obnoxiously Cockney or like what
I despise that. I dislike the guy that makes Fable. So
Peter Molyneux.
Yeah.
I did watch a video for Project Natal the other day, and I was like, man, he really does overpromise everything.
Yeah, I don't know. It's to the point where it's no longer, you know, it's no longer
it's not cute anymore.
Well, it's not like Spore, where it was like, you know, hey, you often do make really awesome things that deliver, and you always, you know, obviously tried to make something really awesome. and it just didn't quite work, you know, the way Spore was, it's now to the point where it's like, you just promise the moon and then make whatever crap you feel like.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry. I'm not a fan of him.
Yeah.
The whole pretentious let's click on a cube thing did not help.
That's what I was just thinking about. I was like, yeah, how's that curiosity going?
Somebody won it, and they're like a character in Goddess now.
That was the prize?
Yeah.
They are
the priceless prize.
They made him a god and goddess. Yeah.
That seems like a pretty weak prize. God.
I think he also gets some of the profit, which one of the reasons I did not buy a god. No.
No, it's like there's basically they make him an employee of 22 cans.
Hmm.
Yeah. Which is not to be confused for my tropical themed video game company 22 cans. Yeah, we're domain squatting. So
we spell toucans, TWOCAN.
Yeah, like
it's what we do
with dames and their games. Oh man, that is good times. Oh yeah, so keep me on top of how you feel about Dragon Age 2. It's been a long time since I thought about it. I mainlined it over the course of like 2 weeks when it first came out. So yeah. It's like most of what I know of it is from hindsight. I never played any of the DLC, which probably would have helped me because I hear it's really good. But
you beat the game in 2 weeks though?
Yeah, just about.
Okay.
I was looking forward to it.
Side quest?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. Wow.
Yeah.
I'll have something to shoot for now.
Yeah, I did. No, I did like, and just like right before it came out, I finished all of the DLC for Dragon Age 1 as well, you know?
Okay. So here I have a question. The first time it jumps like 10 years, how far into the game is that?
It's about like a third of the way through.
Okay. Yeah. That's pretty much what I felt like I was starting the second act at that point. So yeah. Okay, cool.
Yep. So yeah, it's just like any game that has multiple acts, like the first three make up or the first couple make up most of it, and the last one is real short.
Okay.
Yep. So I'll go through mine real quick. They're, you know, it's kind of hard. I've been out of town for most of the intermission that we've had, because of Thanksgiving. So I have my 3DS with me, and I played a lot of Super Mario 3D Land. Nice. Because I'm trying to get that cleared out so I can play The Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds. I feel bad starting that without having beaten Super Mario 3D Land. And 3D Land is so good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it is. It is a choice Mario cut. Yeah, it's real good, real fun. I haven't talked about it for a while since I, you know, first got my 3DS, but it is kind of, you know, like an early killer app for that system. The platforming is really good. The level design kind of takes my favorite elements of 3D Marios and 2D Marios. So it's got kind of a Mario 64 like loop to it a little bit with Mario Galaxy kind of whimsy to the level designs, and then just kind of cover everything with a paint of Mario Super Mario 3. And you get like a good approximation of what that is. And if you are similar Mario tastes as I am, that will be the recipe for like, oh, I should really pay attention to this. I was a little bit, I picked it back up just because I'd heard so many good things about Super Mario 3D World for the Wii U. And although I have no intention of getting a Wii U here, you know, sometime soon, I think I'm waiting for a full scale, like a full scale Zelda or Metroid before I get one. You know, I recognize like, oh, I actually own the thing that this is based off of, so I might as well play it. what's neat is, so I beat the main campaign, like the first 8 worlds, and once I do that, this isn't a huge spoiler, but the credits roll, and then you have like New Game Plus kind of thing, where you rescue Luigi within about like 3 levels, and then you're just going off on these really hard levels that are kind of like the bonus stages in like, let's say, Mario World. So it's like, hey, you know, we wanted to make this Mario game for everybody, but if you stick around after everything is done, you can have this like really, really hard kind of thing that is meant for like, okay, now, you know, the real Mario fans, you know, let's select this audience and then have you go for it. So that is really good. I don't know how much I'm going to stick with it because it is really hard, and I'd like to play Zelda sometime soon. But yeah, it is super good. And
very cool.
it makes me happy that I have a 3DS.
Is it actually, is it a 2D platformer though?
It's 2D/3D. It's kind of hard to quantify it. So it's structured like 2D, except going into the screen and out of the screen is very important. And there are long stretches where you're going in and out. It's not 3D like Super Mario 64 in that it is like a whole wide world for you to kind of go around. They are explicitly designed courses for you to go after, and kind of the 2D linearity helps drive you forward. But
is it like Little Big Planet?
Not even that. I would say that it's a little bit more free than Little Big Planet. So Little Big Planet, you have like the three levels of depth, and that's about mm-hmm. it. This has it, you good.
Is it like Paper Mario?
Getting just a little bit closer. I would say
warmer?
That like
warmer.
Yeah, I would say it's closer to Paper Mario than Little Big Planet. But it is like the level design is tighter. They're actually making courses for you, whereas Paper Mario, because it's an RPG, is dungeons and towns and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Those were such good games.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, but yeah.
Well, I'm excited for you to start Zelda because I've heard that is very good.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
to, yeah.
Go ahead.
But yeah, no, that I mean that just seems really exciting.
Yeah, you know? the fact that something can come out calling itself the sequel to, Link to the Past, which is one of the most beloved games that has ever been pressed onto a chip, and people mm-hmm. are not immediately just calling it the worst fucking bullshit that ever existed, gives me a lot of hope that it's actually really worthwhile. Even disregarding all of the cool stuff that I've heard about the way that it fucks with the structure, I'm excited just like because the fact that people are not grousing very loudly means that it does live up to its name, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. How long has this been out? That really flew under my radar.
Super Mario Land or Zelda?
No, the Zelda.
Zelda came out like a week ago. Week and a half ago. Yeah. Yep.
Fair enough then.
3DS. I would say now is a really good time to get the 3DS, actually. I think
it just came out with the 2DS, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like if you have a kid, get that. But like the 3DS XL, I think that recently dropped in price as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And even if it didn't, like that is a tremendous value. use our Amazon link, blah blah blah. No, like it is definitely super worthwhile now that the library is kind of built out.
Very cool.
Yeah. The other one that I played, keeping on the mobile tip, and kind of like David, I was not aware that it existed. it really caught me off guard. But Final Fantasy IV, The After Years, Square put out a 3D remake of that for the iPad and iPhone, for iOS in general. I snatched that up because fuck yeah, After Years.
I always have trouble. Is that the Dark Knight one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it is unique in the Final Fantasy canon in that it is a direct sequel to a previous one. So it takes place in the same world, same setting. You get a lot of the same characters, and you also play as some of those characters' kids because it takes place 17 years after the events of the original Final Fantasy IV. This is the one that originally came out on cell phones in Japan and then on WiiWare in the U.S. back around like 2009 or so. And on the Wii, it has kind of the same graphics as Final Fantasy IV/Final Fantasy VI, kind of mishmashes the two of them. It was released in kind of this chapter fashion, and that's kind of how it's presented here, except you buy all of them up front, and then you can just kind of select them and play them as you will. But yeah, not a lot of people like it. A lot of people think it's hot garbage, just because they focus on the grindy aspects of it. But, like as a story, I think it's real cool. You know, even though Final Fantasy IV does present this really kind of closed ended, story, I really like those characters and I like that world. And kind of like the Zelda thing, the fact that they brought out something in that world, that's from a game that I hold so dearly. And like it makes me want more and think like, oh, you're not actually like messing with this. You're adding to it and expounding upon it. And in the later series or in the later chapters, you're really kind of like messing with it in this weird kind of metafictional way. That's real cool. And I'm happy to have it not only in like in a portable fashion, because like they had the Final Fantasy IV Complete on PSP, but they really fucked with the graphics a lot and made it look just kind of like weird. Whereas this is, you know, not 2D like the original one. It is the 3D Final Fantasy IV graphics, but that's different enough from the originals that I don't feel that they're like messing with it arbitrarily. And it adds a lot, and it controls pretty well on the iPad too, on the iPad as well, rather. But yeah, it's very much the game that I remember, and the 3D graphics do contribute a little bit to making it feel like a fresh new experience. It is $16.99. You know, it's like a $16 iOS game. I'm comfortable paying that amount for a game, especially a full-scale RPG. A lot of people complain about the Square tax or whatever. And in fact, when I tweeted about it, I believe my exact words were, "Hey, click this link if you want to play a way too expensive version of a thing that only I like." I don't think it's way too expensive. I'd rather pay.
Full disclosure.
I would rather pay what a game is worth in order to play the game rather than just be like 99 cents. Bleh. But yeah, that might be something that keeps you away from it.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Is you mentioned it was originally on cell phones. Is that obvious at all?
No. It plays like a full scale, the battle system plays like an expanded Final Fantasy IV. And you know, you still navigate, you know, in a way. It was a Japanese cell phone game, so it wasn't like a Brick Breaker or Snake over here, you know. Yeah.
Just the image of like what the game would look like on like an old school flip phone entertains me.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
So it is time for a multiplayer repeat because I lost the previous one. But the show marches on, and we want to make sure that your voices are heard. So the question that we asked during the last recording session was, in this world of sequels and reboots, let's give some props to the games that tried something new. What's your favorite new IP from recent years and why? And people came out in force to respond to this on Facebook. So I will ask that we continue reading these. David, why don't you say what Geolaw has to say?
Sure. Geolaw says, the Swap is a really cool 2D puzzle platformer with a surprising amount of depth both in gameplay and story. It's short but really solid. You're exploring an abandoned space station trying to figure out what happened. You gather bits of logs that fill in the story, and the themes that keep repeating through the game are all tied together in its ending. The gameplay's unique. You've got a cloner gun that lets you project copies of yourself that are disposable and follow your movements, as well as the ability to swap into copies of yourself, which plays into the plot. The art style is really cool, and supposedly it's all hand-sculpted stop motion, which, as a side note, that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
It's the most solid game as a whole package I can think of, and the only game in a decade I've 100%. Check it out, comrade.
Yeah. So I wonder what's going to happen, like, you know, years down the line, let's say 5 years, when we look back at this, you know, kind of the early part of this decade and the last part of the previous decade, at just this glut. And it sounds negative when I say glut, but it's the only word I can think of. But just the fact that, like, so much of what's out there and what seems to be making money for people are indie puzzle platformers like the Swapper. You know, like the opening, you know, bell, the starting pistol for this was Braid, I think. But there's just like a bumper crop of stuff that fits that milieu. Yeah.
Yeah, be interesting. I wonder if it'll, you know, kind of launch a sort of subgenre, a genre, or if it'll just kind of be, you know, sort of a fad. Maybe not fad's the right term, but, you know, kind of maybe be kind of like adventure games were, where it's like that was a really cool genre that, you know, they made a lot of in the past that they don't anymore.
I think it's kind of like in the early 2000s, late 90s, it seemed like anybody who was developing anything made it a first person shooter or a mod of first person shooter. And like the puzzle platformer seems to be, you know, the replacement to or extension of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. let's see here. Ben, what's Jala say?
I can name a few, but I'll talk about the one that should be obvious and keep it short and sweet. Plants vs. Zombies, 2009. This game is infectious. And I believe that happened 2 weeks ago. And available on all manner of devices.
I get it.
Watch it. Now I get it. Oh,
give me 2 weeks.
Yeah, I must have been dead 2 weeks ago. Pretty much anyone can play it and have fun thanks to the cute graphics, silly premise, great music, variety of modes / challenges / activities, and gradual ramp up. Although it spawned a sequel, I haven't heard nearly as much hoopla about that, and in fact haven't enjoyed PvZ2 nearly as much. The original, however, is one of my top 3 games played on Steam. The zombies are coming.
Yeah, I recently replayed Plants vs. Zombies, talked about it here. And yeah, that is, people are really excited about Plants vs. Zombies. Like, I can't say that I am, you know, any more interested in Garden Warfare than just out of curiosity about what that will possibly look and feel like. But yeah, like that did kind of launch a franchise 4 years ago, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like my little zombie figurine. That's kind of nice. But
I really enjoyed their pseudo viral marketing where they had just the guy dressed up in the zombie costume.
Oh yeah. Let's see here, David, what's your favorite new IP from the past recent?
I think realistically, probably Dark Souls. That or maybe Borderlands. If I was going, I'm obligated to though say the level. I think the level is really, really, truly revolutionary, okay. And I really feel like it, you know, breaks new ground
you
in terms.
You know,
of...
you don't have to suck up, right? You're on the show.
oh, my bad.
Okay. So,
wait a second. Can we get promoted or something?
No, you can't get promoted. What are you talking about? Yeah, Dark Souls, that, like, so in Mark 1 of this conversation, I forgot about Dark Souls until the very end, which we'll get to. But, yeah, it almost feels like cheating. Like, I put a moratorium on me talking about Dark Souls unbidden, so.
It's tough, too, because it's a sequel, too, and that kind of invalidates sequels, yeah. But.
Well, I think that, you know, if Plants vs. Zombies counts as a new title, like, Dark Souls or Demon Souls counts as well because that came out in the same year.
And so Dark Souls is just a reference point for Demon Souls when that came out, or
yeah. I mean, just, you know, Dark Souls is just a spiritual successor, and you could argue that Demon Souls is a, you know, spiritual successor to the Kingsfield games. I'm not sure where I want to draw the line on that, or which hill I want to die on.
Although I feel like where it comes down to, I feel like Dark Souls. I don't know. I'm sure fans would disagree, but Dark Souls is kind of the one that's quote-unquote culturally relevant, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And Demon's Souls has been going strong for a good long while. Like, Dark Souls broke out because it was on multiple consoles and the PC as well.
Right. But I'm saying in terms of... I feel like Dark Souls is going to be relevant in terms of, you know, I don't know, kind of, I think, in terms of kind of, you know, playing with difficulty and, you know, things like that. And so I think it's going to be Dark Souls will be the one that people will remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. But I think that anybody who likes Dark Souls is going to think, like, man, I want more of this. And Demon's Souls is
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
So,
yeah.
Like, in that case, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Huh. Ben, how about you? Your favorite new IP?
Yeah, so totally go back on what I said about not saying sequels. I think Bioshock Infinite had one of the best aesthetics of a game that came out this year. Yeah. And so I was just really impressed by that. And just some of the settings I thought were really original.
Yeah.
Like the arcade.
For real. Yeah, I would call Bioshock Infinite distinct enough from its predecessors to count.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think that really the only reason they called it BioShock was because of marketing.
Yeah, that's actually, I think when I first played it, that's actually what I said, is that my one disappointment with it is that I wanted another BioShock game and this wasn't.
Mm-hmm. However,
I liked it as much as whatever. Like, in terms of tone and stuff, it's very, very different.
Right.
Can I say like objectively it's not? Like it's...
Yeah. Yeah. Say it.
Well, we need to do a spoiler cast on this,
okay,
by the way, since
okay. I'll beat it in the next week or so, and
yeah. Just beat it in general. Like it's if you're going to talk about it, it is worthwhile to have played it. Or to have beaten it, rather.
Yeah.
Just because the new information has come to light, man. Yeah.
It's a lot of ins and outs here.
Oh, man. So I'm going to do two in a row here just because one of them is really short. So Robert Noakes via Facebook says, Bastion, I loved everything about the game. Yeah, I like Bastion a lot, too. I'm real excited about Transistor as well.
Is that their next game?
Yes. Yes.
Do you like Bastion because you did the narration for it?
I am not that talented. Don't worry. No. I think that the narration had a lot to do with it, but the music, just a lot of stuff about the presentation in general, like as kind of a nice mindless top-down combat game, it really was successful, but maybe not an awful lot special. But man, that game skated a good long way on charm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Looking here, continuing to Christopher Schley, who says mine, let's see here. He says, I love scary games, so it's probably no surprise that I'll mention Amnesia, The Dark Descent. And sure, while the gameplay is similar to the Penumbra games, I feel like it was with Amnesia that Frictional was able to capture the true meaning of survival horror, or at least the sort that I've always been looking for. In Penumbra, sure, you could pick up a pickaxe or a block of wood and hit the evil dog monsters upside the head in defense, but with Amnesia, your only defense was hiding in the closet or risking the insanity of being in the dark. To me, it was the purest form of survival horror. Plus, it didn't hurt that it was absolutely fucking terrifying. I think I threw in an extraneous fucking there, but it is really terrifying. He continues, an honorable mention to Gone Fucking Home, and honorable mentions to these other short and heavily story-based games, such as Dear Esther and To the Moon.
Don't you mean Dear Fucking Esther?
Yes, Dear Fucking Esther and To the Fucking Moon. To the goddamn moon. yeah. Amnesia, like that is very much so. So, in Mark One of this conversation again, I'm so sorry to keep making reference to that. We had a little bit of a discussion about like what constitutes a new IP. Like, I would hesitate to call Gone Home that, even though it is a new quote intellectual property. Like, it's not referencing a previous movie or a previous game, you know, et cetera. It's not a sequel. It's not a remake. But like, when I think of IP, I think of something that like a company does with the intention to build a world or to build a set of mechanics that future stuff can kind of be based on. And
so Amnesia still flies, right?
Yes. Yes, I think Amnesia flies. You know, Dear Esther does not. To the Moon, maybe, because they are planning a sequel, but it's never going to come out. So, but yeah, Amnesia definitely
does. One of these days, Alice.
That was pretty good. Yeah. Yep, so he took mine preemptively.
Which one was yours, Amnesia?
Amnesia, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And let's see here. Ben, why don't you take us home with...
Hate to beat an undead horse at the bonfire again and again, but Dark Souls.
Yep. Which, if I'm honest with myself, that would be my one answer. But I don't want to be predictable and boring. So, yeah. Neat.
You don't want to be completely predictable. You want to be somewhat predictable.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to be. I want to be predictable in the ways that matter. So. There we go. So thank you, everybody, for writing in on that. I'm sorry it took us so long to do that. But your answers were so nice, we read them twice. Yeah. So if you want to participate in future conversations, discussions, go ahead and hit up facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. You guys want to take it home?
Let's bring it on home. Let's cool. Gone home.
Button it up.
the credit.
So that was the level. Thank you, everybody, for listening to that. I would like to keep this admin section short and sweet. We already mentioned the Facebook page. Like us, rate us, review us on iTunes. Tell a friend about the show. If you're going to be doing any Christmas shopping, please be sure to hit up the tip jar. That is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. And do your Amazon shopping through that. That does help defray things like network costs and blah, 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 in order to bring the show to you roughly every week and the other fine shows in the network. In a matter of personal plugs, Hex Crank is still going strong. We just put up I just put up an article about Personal Nightmare, which is a absolutely terrible adventure game for the PC. Go and read that if you want to see me being very upset with the people who made that. Is there anything I'm missing, fellas? Okay, so
you're missing your co-host. That's what you're.
Yeah. So, in the face of that just startling silence, this has been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
This has been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
This has been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah. Thank you very much for listening, everybody, and go home.
Hey, Cole, we should button up the podcast.
Damn it! I love that laugh. That was a pretty good one.
Wait. What are we damning?
Cole didn't ask me this week.
No. So. Actually, you volunteered. You said, let's go home.
But I didn't specifically say button it up. Yeah. I didn't ask Ben, can we button it up, which is what he's protesting against.
I still think it counts.
Gone Home counts.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that can be the game, as Cole has to more subtly and subtly ask if he can end the podcast.
Yeah.
Are you spelling it D-O-G or D-A-W-G?
Oh, you know the answer to that question.
I don't.
D-A-W-G, man.
Okay.
Or D-A-W-G dog.
It could totally go either way for you, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that the A-W dog has been a part of my vocab for a little bit, for a minute.
Cole, you are equal parts fun and proper. So
yep.
I don't know where it would be, you know, where you would split.
You know, it's business in the front and party in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was a back dog right there.
That was a back dog. That might be post roll. So. So let us. If your porch is safe and sound, Ben, then let us continue.
I'm not even going to tell you to begin, much less when to end.
Okay, cool. No, I was doing markers, man. I'll do another marker.
Sorry.
Jeez,
oh, man. My bad, dude.
I messed it up. No, don't worry. Jeez.
Hey, did you set your marker yet?
Yeah, I did.
All right.
I like to leave a little bit of silence so I can see it more. Can you oblige me of that?
Silence is golden.
Here we go. Man. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Moneysmith. Like, wait a minute, we're missing someone.
Okay, let's do it for real. That will be post-roll.